Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here. I hope that you did your homework last week. We've been looking, week two of a series called Wilderness, and there's three places where this story is talked about in the Bible. Two are 13 verse or relatively lengthy, 13 verses and 11 verses, and the other is one verse in the Gospel of Mark. So what I asked you to do last week is to read this passage in Luke chapter 4 and also in Matthew chapter 4 and notice the difference between them, and that was sort of thing one. Now, happy Mother's Day to all of you, by the way, and you should always tell the kids happy Mother's Day because they are the ones who have the power to make it happy for their mother, so you should always mention the kids as well. When we were growing up, my mom has, I have two brothers, so my mom has three boys. I'm the middle and the favorite. And one of our favorite things to do was when we were kids is to go to this place called Pleasant Hill Beach. And we grew up in Atlanta, so we didn't have the beach besides. We went to this place. It was like a, I'm not really sure what it was before. It was a pit of water. But that's where we went. And it was like a little sand beach, and it had some water in it and whatever. And so what would happen is one of our favorite things to do is we would start, as soon as we woke up, Mom, summertime, Mom, can we go to Pleasant Hill Beach? So, and she would usually say yes. And maybe this was at 7 o'clock in the morning. We got up. By the time we kind of waited, our, you know, okay, it's time to ask. Mom, can we go to Pleasant Hill Beach? And she would say, yes, we can go. Now, the problem is that sometimes Pleasant Hill Beach wasn't readily available when we wanted to go at 7 o'clock in the morning. Because sometimes it didn't open until 10 o'clock. And so from 7 to 10 feels like a very long time when you're 8 and you want to go to the beach, Pleasant Hill Beach, not the real beach, Pleasant Hill Beach. You've got to qualify that. And so what begins to happen is in this time, a lot of questions start to form, right? Things like this, Mom, what time is it? It's 7:10. Okay, how much longer? Okay, 2 hours and 50 minutes. And this goes on and on and on. And sometimes what would happen is it wouldn't even be like they were open because it would be like in the middle of the week and we still had some school left and we have to wait till Saturday. So now it's not 3 hours, it's like 3 days. And sometimes 3 hours feels like 3 days, right? So 3 days goes by, and then what happens is about day two, you're like, Mom, we're going to Mike, I told you we're going to the beach. Well, Mom, you promised, right? You start questioning their faithfulness. Are you really going to do this? You promised, you said you would do this. She says, we're going, it's just going to take some time. Sometimes it's 3 days. Sometimes it's 3 months. Sometimes it's 3 years. Sometimes it's longer. But regardless, it all feels like the same amount of time when something has been promised and it hasn't yet been delivered on. Doesn't it just feels like forever? And there's this waiting, this process, and we talk about this, we call it the wilderness. This is where temptation happens. Temptation rarely happens when you're getting exactly what you want. It's usually when things start to be put off, when you don't quite know, or you're not quite certain, or you're not quite in control, and all of a sudden other things start to look good. There's a way out. There's something you can do. And that's what we've been talking about in this scenario, this story of the wilderness of Jesus and his 40 days in the wilderness. There's a couple of important things we need to observe today, and I'm going to mention those to you. And then we're going to set up the last 2 weeks of this series. And today's the title of today's talk is called The End of Temptation. How would you like for temptation to have an end in your life? We're going to talk about that today. So we're going to read out of Matthew chapter 4 today. We looked at Luke chapter 4 last week. Read out of Matthew chapter 4. They're almost the same. There are one subtle difference that I don't know or understand its significance. And the other difference, I think, is quite significant. So that's what we're going to look at. Matthew chapter 4, verse 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. To be tempted by the devil. He was put out there to be tempted by the devil. And after 40 days, after fasting for 40 days and night, he was hungry. This is a very profound verse, by the way. If you read the Bible, you like underline the verse. Oh, that's awesome. He was 40 days, 40 nights without food. He was hungry. Verse 3. The tempter came, that was a joke, by the way, just in case y'all are like, what is wrong with Mike? The tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. And Jesus answered and he said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Then the devil took him to the holy city and he had him stand on the highest point of the temple. He says, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. Jump. And this is where it gets really interesting because Satan actually uses God's word against him. He says, God said this, and you need to, God said this. This is why you should expect this. God's already said this. He's promised this. He said, right? He said, we're going to go. We've promised. It's what he's doing. He says, so he takes him up there and he says, jump. And then he says, this is what Satan says. For it is written, right? He will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. Jesus, jump. There's no way God's going to let you splat. There's no way he's going to allow this to happen. There's no way he's going to allow something to happen to you. No way, especially die. And think about this. This is Satan tempting Jesus. There's no way he's going to allow you to die. Do you know what Jesus came for? And what about you? There's no way he would allow you to struggle. There's no way he would allow you to have this happen or that circumstance. There's no way he would allow a relationship to go sideways or south. There's no way he would allow financial hardship. There's no way he would delay things in your life, right? There's no way God would do this. And yet he does. And he does it all the time. And it happens all the time. Now, I want to make a real quick sort of caveat here. For some of you, you're here and you're going, why does bad things happen to good people? Well, bad things happen to all people all the time, and there's really no specific prohibition. It's universal to what it means to live in a sin-stained, fallen world that's struggling, that's groaning. It's how it's talked about in the Bible. And what I would tell you today is, if you're trying to figure out if God's put you here, wherever you might be, you're in this place, and if God's put you there, or if you're there because it's consequences for choices you've made, that can happen too. There are seasons that we have to endure because they're consequences of previous decisions we've made, or maybe it's just circumstances that have happened to you. I don't know which one of those might be your case, but I would tell you why doesn't really matter. What you're going to do while you're there matters more than anything else. And you got to get a handle on this, or else you're going to stop too soon and miss the very thing that might be the reason or might be the redemption of this whole process. So Satan uses and says, surely God wouldn't do this. And then Jesus answers him this in verse 7. It is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test. And again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said, all this I will give to you if you will bow down and worship me. And Jesus said, away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him alone. That's the end of the three temptations. It's the end of the three temptations. Now, what's interesting about this is the subtle difference between these two is the temptations are out of order. If you looked at this last week, you'll realize that from Luke, it's stone to bread, it's take what you want or show them the kingdom of the world, and then it's jump off the temple, was that order. And in today's, it was turn stone to bread, jump off the temple, and then show them the kingdom. So it's just, there's an order difference. And I don't know why. Two different people writing about the same thing, and they switched the order up. There might be speculations that we can talk about. That's not super important today, but what I think is really interesting is the way it ends. This passage ends like this. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 11, it says, then the devil left him, and the angels came and attended him. So Satan gets to the end of this, and then he leaves, and then angels are sent, and they tend to Jesus. There's something that happens that he begins to recover. If you remember last week, right, recovery is important to this idea of resistance building strength. So in Luke, it ended like this. It said, when the devil had finished all of his tempting, he left him until an opportune time. So one place we see the angels come and they tended Jesus, and the other place we see Satan goes and he's waiting for another chance to do it again. Now, what we've got to do is we sort of think about this. I want us to look at this and just think about what this means for us. Because whenever you're reading the Bible, one thing I want for you to do is to be able to read the Bible. A lot of people struggle to read the Bible because they're afraid they're going to be wrong. And I would say you will be wrong. Like we're always wrong. We try, we look, we observe, we think, we pray, we wrestle. So we got to wrestle with this stuff. So I've been wrestling with this, trying to understand what is significant about these three temptations. What is it about this that we need to understand or to figure out? You see, what happens to us in these periods of time between when something was promised and when something is delivered is how we define faithfulness. And for some of you, the reason you've walked away from God, the reason your faith is shaken or shattered or non-existent is because God didn't do what you expected him to do. And you say things like this: if God were real, he would not have blah, 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 or he would have blah, blah, blah. Whatever your reason or thinking is there. And whatever it is, this distance, this uncertainty in the middle has train wrecked your faith. And it has taken away from you perhaps the very thing that can sustain you. And I want you to consider this for a moment. Because a lot of us struggle with this. We think that we're going to depend on science or facts or all these other things, and it's going to fall way short. It's going to disappoint you in ways that you cannot imagine. But there's something that sustains us throughout this life and beyond. And it is the simple thing that God gives us called faith. And it is dependent upon where or what you believe faithfulness looks like. And if you believe that faithfulness is getting what you want when you want it, so whether it's 3 days or 3 months or 3 years or whatever, then all of a sudden you're going to define and stop short and go chase something else. Now, it's interesting, these three temptations. We're going to sum these up real quick, because the way we define faithful is what happens between the distance between the promised and the promised land. Between when God said this would happen, between when Mom said you can go to Pleasant Hill Beach, and we actually show up. What happens in this space is critical. When I say, Mom, you promised. God, you promised. You promised. You said you would do this. Those conversations are extremely important in revealing about where our faith lies. So the three temptations. Temptation number one deals with our strength. And I'm putting them in this order. This is the first one in both passages. This is turn stone into bread. This is turn stone into bread. Hey, Jesus, you've been in the wilderness 40 days and you're hungry, right? Hungry. I'm hungry if I don't have lunch. 40 days is going to be bad news for a lot of people. And in fact, I don't have time to tell that story, but I did like a sugar, no gluten. I thought I was going to kill somebody in just a few days. But you're hungry, and Jesus has the power to turn stone into bread. He actually has it within his disposal to do it. He can say, boom, and it's bread, and he eats. And we all think, what is wrong with that? What is wrong with that? What is wrong with, because you can do something, doing it? And we all know this, right? There are things that just because you can do, you shouldn't do them. We know this. But the problem with us is we don't have any real governor. And what this is about, what this temptation is about, is surrendering my power for his provision. It's surrendering my power for his provision. Because I can do something doesn't mean that I should do it. We don't really have that in our culture anymore. We basically, whatever the opportunity is in front of us, we just take it because it might not be there the next time. And so we're grabbing opportunity. We're taking advantage of everything and everyone we can, and nothing stops us. You wonder why you never experienced God's provision. It's because you just ran so far ahead of it. I remember when I was struggling with what to do with my life, I was just getting ready to graduate from college, and I had grown up, my youth minister was tremendous influence on my life. He taught me about quiet time. He taught me how to read the Bible. He taught me about all kinds of things. I was trying to figure out what God wanted me to do. And so I wanted to be an architect more than anything. And the reason, largely, I didn't want to go in the ministry because I didn't want to work for a church. I had no desire to work for a church. And it took me a long time to get over that. Actually, it was like last week before, I'm just kidding. But it took me a long time to get over this. And so I did not want to work for a church. I didn't. And I can tell you reasons. There are reasons why. Churches are crazy places at times. And so I wanted to be an architect, and I had this opportunity to go and interview at this place. And so my youth minister wrote me a letter of encouragement. Now, here's what I would have written if I were him. Hey, Mike, I hope this door closes. I hope God closes this door so that you can put this to bed and you can go and do what it is that you're supposed to. I hope he closes this door. That's not what Bill Hughes wrote me. He said, Mike, I hope they offer you the job. I hope they offer you a job. I hope they offer you a pension plan. I hope they offer you a 401k. I hope they offer you more money than you can spend. I hope they offer you the world. I'm like, this is not helpful. He said, so you can say no to that and go do what you're supposed to do. I'm like, thanks for that. I still have that letter in my office in a box. Nobody does that because we ask for God to shut doors, because basically, as long as we can turn stone into bread, guess what we do? just like that. I mean, how many of us do we ever even stop and say, does God want to provide for me in a different way? And the problem is, the more money you have, the more resources you have, the more charisma you have, the smoother you are, the cooler you are, the more your opportunities to turn stone into bread are. And you do this your whole life. You do this your whole life. Have you ever surrendered your power for His provision? Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should. Just because there are opportunities for things that are in front of you, whether it's job opportunities or money opportunities or sexual opportunities or relationship opportunities, it doesn't mean that you should do them. And I could go through the list. I could tell you each one of those specifically and how it's played itself out in my life, because all these are high-level points of contention and temptation for me, and I assume they are of you as well. But if you ever want to wonder how to deal with money, how is it if you have resources, you can just do stuff? Do you know how you begin to trust His provision? You start giving stuff away. You learn how to give. You want to really test this, you learn how to give. You want to surrender your power for His provision, you learn how to give. It has been one of the toughest lessons for me personally to learn, because money is the capacity to get things done. A lot of us, this is how our whole worlds are created. We want to save all this so that we have security and we have options, and we don't need His provision because we've already got it. You want to learn how to live in His provision. You got to learn how to, and you got to find out what your spot is. It's not my, your spot may not be my spot. It might be relationally. Some of you live relationally and you have learned that you can use your power to get what you want because you're charming or because you're cool or because of this or whatever it is. And you're always, it's always this exchange. You want to learn how to trust His permission. You learn how to serve other people. Some of you are always in the spotlight. You're always in charge. You want to learn how to get that broken. You go do things where you get to be a part of things. I spend a lot of my time in my life on a stage and doing this kind of stuff. I have to be in a place where I sit in a seat and I listen, I pay attention, and I participate, because I need that perspective. Or else you just think that everything looks the same from this perspective, and it doesn't. I have to have ways to give up the power, the influence, whatever, that God has given me in order to trust and learn His provision. You cannot underestimate this. You got to test yourself. How much of your life have you spent turning stones into bread? Maybe it's time to stop and go, God, I want to trust Your provision. That's temptation number one. That's just the first one. Isn't this good? Number two, this is the temptation of my demands. This is, hey, here's the whole world. You can have what you want when you want it. You can have whatever you want, whenever you want it. That's the temptation, y'all. That's like our culture. That's why we go to school. That's why we get a job. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. You know, our demands. What you have to learn here, the temptation is we have to be able to lay down, to surrender our will for His ways. I want to be really clear on this, that His ways, the way in which God works and operates, is vastly different than the way Mike would operate. You should have a list of things that you would do if you were God. That's a fun list to create. This is what I would do if I were God. You're like, this would be a lot of fun. And what you realize is that He is nothing like you or me. He doesn't do things the way we do them. We would open Pleasant Hill Beach right here, right now, so I could get there, because we love this. We love temptation number two. He knows that there's something in the process, there's something that happens to us that's important in this, that allow us to become. You're never going to become the kind of person you're intended to become by simply getting what you want when you want it all the time. I mean, try raising your kids like that. Oh, wait, we have a whole generation who's doing that. I'm just kidding. Did I say that out loud? Okay, God, it was in my head. I just came out. So this is number two. You understand what I'm saying? There's a way in which God operates, and we have to be able to submit our will, what we would do or what we would demand Him do, for the sake of what He has already intended, for the way He is. He is a particular way, and He's not going to change. Not because we're in a hurry, not even because we don't like where we are. He does not change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. This is the stability that we have. And then the third is to surrender my life. This one's hard. This is hard. This is really hard. This is exceedingly hard. Because what this is to say, oh, God would never let that happen to you, and all of a sudden it happens to you. And you realize that somehow, some way, his purpose, his intention, his good and kind intention is more valuable than even my own life. That doesn't happen because you wake up and you sing, take my life and let it be evermore and only for thee. Like, it doesn't happen. It is a process by which you begin to see and understand and come to believe that giving myself, that availing every part of me for his purpose is more important than anything else. This is what happens in this place between this promise and his provision when we experience it. Now, here's what I want to spend a couple of minutes on, because this is really important for you and I to consider. Whenever we start to get restless, and it can be at some point in here, for some of you, you've been dealing with something for 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years. That's a long time. And you're tired of it. You're sick of it. And what happens in these moments is it all of a sudden, as soon as we think that we're not going to get what we want, we start going, Mom, you promised, right? You can feel this, whatever gets just sucked out of it, and it creates a vacuum. And in that vacuum is where all this stuff happens. Hey, you could get that if you wanted. Why don't you just turn those stones into bread? Hey, you know what? If God were really faithful, he would let you have that. Surely he wouldn't do that, right? Those things start to happen in those moments. And what I want to ask you about is this thing that I call the drift. The drift. Now, I want to ask you about your drift, because everybody has a drift. Every single person who's listening to this right now, you have a drift. You drift in a particular direction. The way I've defined drift is this. Drift is the natural direction of your thoughts, attitudes, choices, and actions. Drift is the natural direction of your thoughts, attitudes, choices, and actions. So let me ask you a question. When you don't get what you want, which way do your thoughts drift? Upward and glorious? Or does everybody start becoming a pain and in your way? What happens to other people? What happens to God? What happens to you? What happens to your past? If that's your drift. How long does it take you to get there when things don't start going your way? 10 seconds or so? So your thoughts, your attitudes, and I'm not talking about your teenage kids, I'm talking about you, right? How long does it take a bad attitude to develop in your own life? At least 10 minutes. So my point is, which way do you drift? Do you drift toward a better and more wholesome attitude? Or do you drift toward more self-absorbed, victim, attitude? I told you it's going to get better. Choices. The more frustrated you get, the more likely you are to take what you can, true or false. We start choosing, and all of a sudden we're demanding, we're in one of these areas. We start grabbing, we start doing things, and then it really just leads to sort of the activity of our lives, our entire actions. And for some of you, this is more dangerous than others. People tend to respond with frustration with one of two ways. Either they control, they're control freaks, or they're escape artists, right? Some of you know who I'm talking about. You're a control freak. As soon as things get out of your control, the claws come out, and it's just like, wah! And others of you are like, that's it, I'm checking out. I don't care, I'm going to watch Netflix. And you're like, hours binge-watching Parenthood. I just watched Parenthood for the first time, like binge watched it the first time. I'm late to the party, I know, but we did that. And it actually feels good, like, oh, the whole world just revolves around this little, the Bravermans. This is awesome. And you can forget about everything else for a while. And we're escape artists. We escape, we amuse ourselves, we occupy ourselves. Some of you, it's more serious because it's led to addictive behaviors. As soon as you don't get what you want, it's a glass of wine, a bottle of wine, it's a few too many beers, it's a pill, it's a this, it's a that. And it's been really, really difficult. But this is the drift. Everybody has a drift. Do you know what your drift is? Because this is where, this is what's going to happen when things start to go south, when things don't work out the way you want, when it's 3 days, when it's 7 o'clock, and you can't get to the beach until 10 o'clock. That's what's going to happen. It's going to happen every single time. And one of the things that's really interesting about this, when you read this, the Bible never tells us that we're not going to be tempted. It never says that. Instead, it says stuff like this. Romans chapter 5. It says, and we boast, Romans chapter 5, verse 2, and we boast in the hope of the glory of God. So we sit there and we boast in the hope that there's something that's been promised and there's something coming and there's a hope that we're excited about. We get to go to Pleasant Hill Beach. It excites us. That's easy to be excited about. But it goes on in verse 3, it says, not only so, but we also glory or bask or rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. If you go to the gym and you grunt and you groan, you go, you know this because you know that that work is what's producing in you the thing that you're looking for. It produces perseverance, and perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. There's a progression here. And it goes on, it says in verse 5 that hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit whom he has given us. And his love has filled us, and therefore there's no shame. Now, I'll tell you, do you know how character is built by perseverance? I'm going to tell you next week, but here's what I want to do today. There's one more place I want you to see this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, it says this. It says that no temptation has overtaken you except that which is common to all mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. This is a powerful thing. Look at this. Because some of you are sitting there, you're going, and you don't understand, Mike, no one's ever faced what I'm facing. That's the first lie that the enemy's going to tell you. No one's ever been through this before. Let me tell you, I know a lot of people. I see a lot of people. People have been through what you're going through. In fact, I could probably introduce you to someone who's going through the same thing you are today because I hear it all the time. There is no temptation that you are facing that does not have a fabric of commonality to all fallenness and human beings, no matter what it is. You are not alone. You're just in between. So I want us to think of this because it says there's no common. And he says, God is faithful. How you measure God's faithfulness is unbelievably important. You have to have a picture of what this looks like. People ask me, see, when we started Port City Church, there was no guarantee. We started, it was me and Chris and Cindy and Julie, there were four of us and just a few people that were going to get together and start this church. And what happens is every time you come to the church and you're looking at the curtain at Roland Grice and going, there's nobody here yet. We can't start. And you would wait, and all of a sudden there would be like five people, all right, we're starting. It's like 10, we're starting. We start. And then every week we take up the offering, there'd be no money. And you're always like, I'm going to quit. We're going to quit. We're going to stop. We're going to quit. Every week was like, we're going to quit. People say, Mike, did you ever want to quit? She's like, every Monday wanted to quit. Usually every Sunday wanted to quit. And what we realized, this was not a healthy way to keep going. So we decided, when do we quit? Like, at what point do we say enough is enough? At what point do we say we're not doing this anymore? You know what we said? We actually had an answer to that question. This is 18 years ago. We said, in 20 years, if nobody's coming, we'll quit. So I have 2 more years of my contract, then I can make a decision. But here's why. Because if you don't have that marker, you're 2 days in, or you're 2 years in, and things aren't going the way you want, or you're 10 years in, and things start going south. And you know what you want to do more than anything else? You want to quit. I've done enough. I've seen enough. It's time for me to live my life. It's time for me to do this. This isn't worth it. This isn't worth it. Dadgummit, I'm going to turn some stone into bread. It's time. I will tell you, I have felt like that a lot. And for some of you, this is the thing I want you to understand. When you start to understand a thing about God's faithfulness, do not quit too soon. How many miracles do you think that we have missed? How many times do you think that I look at this in my life and I cannot believe the ways that God has provided for me unbelievably perfect over and over and over and over again. Sometimes it was because I did not have the option to turn stone into bread, right? That was not an option. Sometimes I had the option And for whatever reason, I just held fast and I refused. And I said, I'm not going to give in or stop short. For some of you, you've been doing this for a long time and it's frustrating. I know, and it's hard. But you do not want to get somewhere down here only to realize that you stopped too short. Do not give up. It says he is faithful. Y'all, the temptations that I have faced that I begged God to take away have been some of the things that I've learned so much and found such freedom in. And I'll make one more comment. I guess I can. We're already over just a little bit, but I want to tell you one more thing. This is sort of free. It's actually next week. But one of the things that we have done to our culture is we think that the highest expression of freedom is to be able to choose. The highest value or expression of freedom is to be able to choose to do what you want when you want to do it. Y'all know a lot of people who have that kind of freedom and are enslaved in their heart. The highest marker of freedom isn't your ability to choose. It's your ability to be alive even when nothing else feels that way. It's inside of us. And you know this is true. You know this is true. We don't have this. This is why we have to let him do the work in us in order to experience and come to understand that. And it starts when we begin to believe it, to trust that he is faithful. Look how he finishes this, that no temptation is going to be put on you can't bear. Keep going. Look at this. But when you are tempted. See, the cool thing about this is Satan left and it said he's coming back. So you can make a note. There is going to be another. If you're sitting here today going, man, everything's cool, it is coming. He is going to come after you at the opportune time. Maybe you'll need a little bit more power to turn stone into bread, and that's when he's coming. He's coming to tempt you again. But when you are tempted, he, God, will provide a way out so that you can endure it. He, God, will provide a way out so you can endure it. What word would you underline? What word jumps out at you? Way out. Way out. God will provide a way out. When I see this girl on the beach, he's just going to evaporate me to somewhere else. And we pray things like this. We're like, right? Don't. That's a way out. That's a way out. God, if you love me, you would get this person out of my life because this person tends to be angry. Just remove this person. That's a way out. Or make, you know, let me, a way out is me getting out of where I am. That is not what this verse says. He says that he will provide a way out so that you can endure. Newsflash, the way out is through. That's how you get there. So you have to be ready for this. So I want to give you two concepts and I'm going to be done. The thing that I've been wrestling with is this idea. Number one, we have what I call dependent endurance. Dependent endurance. This is where you say, God, I'll be faithful as long as you prove it. And everything that happens, every prayer that you throw up, everything that you do is all something to build evidence to see if God is trustworthy. And as soon as he doesn't do what you want him to do on your time frame, your timetable, you go, God, you promise. And because you promise and deliver, I'm out. And this is dependent endurance, our endurance. He says he's provided a way out so that you can stand under it, so you can endure through it. But your endurance is dependent on how well he proves himself to you in the moments and in the way you demand that he prove himself. Make sense? I've done this a lot. The other way is this concept called enduring dependence. And what this means is I'm going to endure not as long as I have evidence that God is faithful. I'm going to endure as long as God actually is faithful. And he is faithful before time, and he will be faithful after time. And therefore, what you begin to learn is my endurance isn't based on my perspective of his faithfulness. My endurance is actually built on the reality of his faithfulness. And those are two very different things. What I've actually learned, and we're going to talk more about this, is that not only is my faithfulness tied to His. It is actually strengthened from His. Because God has tempted me beyond what might can bear. He has put me in situations beyond what might can hold sanity together. And in those moments, you know what I found? That while might can't withstand them and he can't stay together in them, God can give him a strength that allows him to, and it begins to do something in me. That's the point. That's the point. You see, we often define God's faithfulness by how he gets us out of a mess. Get rid of this person. Get rid of this situation. God, just take this desire away from me. I mean, how many of you prayed that prayer? God, if you don't want me to do this, then just take it away from me. But his faithfulness is found in how we depend on it as he takes us through. Don't stop short. So here's what we're going to do. This is your homework. Temptation has an ending point. Temptation ends in one of two ways. Are you ready? Temptation ends, number one, it ends when you indulge in it. It is no longer temptation. It is now sin, and we've all done that, right? How many of you have finished a temptation that way? You just do it. It's over with. All right, I can't take it. I'm in. Temptation over, sin begins. That's way one. We don't really want to do that. The second way, and this came from that last verse in Matthew 4 and Luke 4, that temptation ends when we resist it. Now, here's the problem. How many of you have resisted the same sin over and 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 over, and it feels like the same daggum temptation? Here's what you do. We're going to talk more about this, but I want you to do this week. It's interesting. We think of this 40 days of Jesus in the wilderness, and there's like three temptations. Hey, Jesus, jump off the temple. No, God said this. Hey, turn the stones into bread. No, God says this. Hey, here's all the world. I can give it to you if you'll do this. No, God said this. And it's like 3 minutes. Like, I want you to think about this. 40 days, Jesus had nothing to eat. And Satan is relentless. Let me ask you a question. Do you think this got less intense or more intense over the 40 days? Like, by 40 days, man, he's like at his wit's end. But what happens is at the end of this, right, there's a season, and all of a sudden it says, when this point ended, when it got to a, and the point was really in here somewhere, when it got to here, two things happened. One is there was a place where he was able to recover, and two, Satan went away and waited for another opportune time. So what we have to do, and what you have to do, is you have to draw a line. You have to draw a line. You have to, when you fight something for so long, you have to, it's the same reason when you're doing your workouts, you're counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you plink it down on the thing, and you get up and you do this. And then what do? You go, come on, you can do it again. You get back down and you do another 5. 1, 2. And what you're doing is you're creating these lines. Even a simple rep, 1 is a line. 40 days was a line. But you know what happened in those 40 days? There were 40 days. Every single night when Jesus went to bed, when he laid his down on the sand, he laid down, he said, I can't take it anymore. You know, this used to happen to us. I remember this so vividly. My oldest especially was small. She would not sleep. And some of you know what this is like. I thought, how is she going to stay alive if we don't get some sleep? And I mean, it would be fits. And, you know, she's, I hate you. I don't know if your kids are. I didn't say that, but you wanted to. And so it would just be these you know, fits. And we would get to the end of this, and we would hug, and we would say, hey, bad days are gone, only good days ahead. And I think what happened is Jesus would lay down, and he would say, I can't take it anymore. And he wakes up the next morning, and he finds that God's mercies are new, and they are sufficient. They are new and they are sufficient. When you're dealing with temptation, when you're dealing with all these things to escape or control or turn stone into bread or to withhold, you need a line in the sand. You need to go, this is now over. I've got to take a breath and recover. Sometimes it's at the end of the day when you go, this day is over, and tomorrow I'm going to wake up to new morning mercies. Sometimes it's when you get home from work, you stand and you take a breath and go, I need to declare this over. I need to start into something new. You draw a line and you declare it finished. That's what Jesus did. You learn how to do this, and eventually what happens is you find that you can withstand 3 days, 3 months, 12 months, 9 months, and it produces in us a hope that's going to do something for you that you can't imagine. That's what we're going to be talking about next week, right? Let's pray together. Father, thank you. We have a definition of your faithfulness, Father. We do. And it is largely based on what we would do if we were you. And Father, we don't do that on purpose. It's just sort of how we tend to think. And so we ask that you would help us. We ask that we would declare you faithful, that you are faithful in every possible way. You are faithful to each of us. In the wilderness, in the struggle, in the mistakes, you are faithful to us. God, help us to learn how to depend and to endure because of your faithfulness and not demanding that you continually demonstrate it. Father, I ask that as we do this, that we would begin to withstand the pressure and endure so that it builds character, and that character builds hope, and that hope fuels us to becoming the kind of people that you've intended us to become, to serve your purpose in every possible way. Father, I ask that, and I pray that you would help us and give us strength in this. And I ask this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.